want insight and solutions? You're in for a unique experience, one where you're free to ask questions about where you're stuck, ask and hear questions of an everyday variety, global or personal, deep or ancient. All questions are welcome. Any human issue or problem is seen with a new awareness from Patricia's powerful understanding of whole brain thinking. Receive insights you never thought were possible, and be comforted to hear some insights you always knew were right. Discover the profound and the creative value that problems can give us. And now, Patricia Sun.
Welcome to Trust the Problem. This is Patricia Sun, and today on Trust the Problem, I think I'm going to talk about relating. I was going to call it relationships of all kinds, and that's good, too, because it's so important that we realize that an awful lot of what we do, just as we do with problems, when it comes to relating, we do a lot of managing and not so much relating. I used to say in my workshops, you know, the thing with relationships is that people forget they are about relating. And I have a whole bunch of stories and things I can tell about relating and relationships, and men and women in particular, of course. I have a really great tape on that called Understanding Men and Women. And I won't go into all of that because it's complex and it's long, but it basically is that men and women think differently, and it describes how they do. And that's one thing that's just supportive to understand, that there are differences and how they complement and how they seem alien one to another. But relating itself is another issue, actually, on top of all of that. And this can be with your pets, with your children, with the earth, with your friends, with your boss, with your work associates, with your government, with your clients, with any number of ways that we can look at, with the way we relate to God, how we relate to our bodies. So relating is what we're going to talk about today, and the kinds of problems that come up are so many. We could talk about this all year. But I just want to encourage you to call no matter what direction we're going. If you feel a question, that's time to call. And the number to call, if you'd like to, is 1-877-230-3062. So that's 1-877-230-3072. I'll try to raise the volume here a little bit. Okay. Well, as I say, any question is good. If it's a real question, seem like it's off the subject. I don't know how anything could be off relating. And if it's a problem, it fits. So what really sort of struck me to do this today is I read a quote from the Dalai Lama, and it's so completely true. And he said, consider the following. We humans are social beings. We come into the world as the result of others' actions. We survive here in dependence on others. Whether we like it or not, there is hardly a moment of our lives when we do not benefit from others' activities. For this reason, it is hardly surprising that most of our happiness arises in the context of our relationships with others. And it's so true. And the next best thing with others being people are others being animals, and then nature itself, and then God itself. And all of these relationships give us something that amplify our existence, that allow us to contribute and amplify the existence of the other. And it's very powerful, and that's why it's the source of happiness, and why it moves and doesn't stay the same. And one of the problems that I am always teaching is that we have a style of thinking in our world for our species that's getting very outdated. And I call it old style thinking. And old style thinking is one that thinks either or, cause and effect, black and white, got it or you don't, you win or you lose. weekend I was hearing so many synchronistic things about this winning-losing issue and how it so gets in the way of our relating and growing and being happy. Relating, growing, and being happy. And of course, it's the source of peace, because peace isn't a stillness where nothing moves. Peace is a dynamic place where everything is growing and alive and is working well together. And this is one of the thoughts that came to mind. I heard a quote on NPR radio, and I'm sorry I don't remember the show, but it was a quote about a little Jordanian girl who was in one of these Seeds for Peace programs, which sounds so wonderful, that where they take young people, Palestinians and Israelis, and they go to a camp away from all the fighting, and they learn about each other. They learn to relate to one another as people and to think beyond their wounds. Well, interesting things these children said, two things in particular. One thought was said by a number of children a number of times, where they kept saying that when they talked to each other, when they were relating, they had to win the conversation. And that if they let the other person, quote, make a point about some injustice they had suffered, then they were losing the discussion. This is an archetypal example of dysfunctional old-style thinking. And what these young people were saying was that it was kind of difficult and almost a kind of training themselves to let go of that needing to win the discussion and shift from winning the discussion to empathizing and hearing and feeling the other person's point of view. And, of course, this is the secret. This is the secret to relationship. This is the secret to relating. It's where you really empathize. This is the secret for people who administer public policy. I don't dare call anybody politicians anymore. It has just become such a dirty word. In our culture, we say, oh, it's politics, which means it's dishonest, and it's a lie, and it's manipulation. And it's the same kind of thing as we just say, well, it's business. And it's the same thing. It's business is a euphemism for saying we can lie, we can cheat, we can manipulate, we can be unethical or dishonest. And as I say almost every chance I get these days, the only thing wrong with capitalism, or let's say it the other way, there's nothing wrong with capitalism that ethics wouldn't cure. And of course that's true with life in general, and so it works. But considering the Dalai Lama's quote that we consider how we are truly more than intertwined, more than dependent on one another. We are actually the physical substance of one another. We literally are brothers and sisters. We are related. All life is related, and certainly all species is profoundly related. So when you begin to see people talking about others and being blaming or angry, think of these two things now that I'm going to say. One is the other quote from this little Jordanian girl who had the opportunity to say this to the king, Hussein of Jordan. And she said, he asked her about peace and her experiences in peace, Seeds for Peace group. She said, well, I found that you don't fight for peace with other people. The fight for peace begins with yourself. And the observer who overheard this said they were brought to tears, and the king was almost brought to tears to hear this from an 11-year-old girl. Because it's so true, and at some deep level we know how true it is, that all the power resides in ourselves, that there's power in our bodies, and when we have problems with our bodies, their bodies are crying and trying to speak to us. And that as we feel them and experience them, like there's a thing I used to call when we experience out the grief. And I say, guess what? When you're experiencing things out, you don't feel real hopeful. I'd like to take a break right now, give you all a chance to call, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Address the Problem with Patricia Sun. If you've got a question or a comment, give a call right here, 877-230-3062. That's 877-230-3062. We'll be right back.
Mystic Pop didn't mean to burst your bubble, but the new age is over.
Come into the now age and find the latest and greatest in spirituality, mind, body, and soul with Mystic Pop magazine.
Every full-color issue is bursting with enlightened interviews, features, and current reviews of your favorite now age authors, musicians, artists, and more.
Step out of the old world, new age, and into the now with Mystic Pop magazine. Available at mysticpopmagazine.com, Books a Million, and New Leaf Distribution.
That's mysticpopmagazine.com, Books a Million, and New Leaf Distribution. This segment is brought to you by Voice of Choices Magazine. For a copy of your Voice of Choices Magazine, visit the Healing Arts Wellness and Research Center or visit www.voiceofchoices.org. That's voiceofchoices.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. Now, here is your host. By the way, if you got a question for Patricia, give a call here, 877-230-3062. That's 877-230-3062. Now, here is your host, with the most to say, that is, Patricia Sun.
Thank you, Jeremy.
You're welcome, my dear.
Welcome back. Today, as I said, we're talking about relating. And relating sometimes is hard to do, but it's always valuable, and it's worth the effort to keep trying. I was talking about this little Jordanian girl and the way that she realized that it was working on yourself, really, that creates peace, as these young people did as they got to know one another. And then recently I was thinking about, in the news, there is someone who's, I'm not ever going to really mention names, but very vitriolic, speaking meanly about other people. And I was thinking about that and how so often when people are being really mean, really speaking meanly about someone else, almost always it's projection. Almost always, and you can tell by the that this is true by the quality of it. It has a meanness. Sometimes you have to say the truth about someone and, you know, it's uncomfortable and that's not mean. You're not saying it to hurt them. You're saying it to rectify things. But when somebody is angry and mean, they are not loving themselves. They have a lot of self-hatred. That's what arrogance is about, needing to dominate people. And it's, I think, very important to understand this so that we can live the different energetic response. Because what happens when people are mean or angry or arrogant, we get angry, start to match energy with them. And in matching energy with them, we start being like them. And what we want to do is the other way around, hold our space so clean, so clear, and not really out of will or make nice, but out of having processed and understood. And so you have a freedom, you have a clarity that comes from really understanding, from really knowing. And that is something that nobody can tip over. And it is like a beacon. It's a light in the darkness. It shines light on things. Sometimes you actually don't even have to say anything. You know, you just sort of, sometimes, I don't know, I've just looked at people as they're telling me a lie, you know, and I know it's a big lie. And then, and I just look at them and they go, oh, well, you know, and then they change it. So that, we can let people save face. We're not here to humiliate people in relationships, although you are if your idea of relating is about winning. You know, if you have to win every argument, then you can never let the process move. The energy will always devolve. It'll always degrade into hurting, into defensiveness. So what we want is the, when we're relating, is the most room to tell the most truth in the least threatening way, in the most helpful way, and then it's exciting. Then it's inspiring. I remember when I took people on tours, and just in general, people would talk to my assistant, my secretary, and they would say, you know, my secretary, several that I had, used to tell me, you know, when you need to announce a change or something's not happening that we thought was going to happen, or especially on tours when plans are changed because of circumstances, what you tell them, because if you tell them, everybody goes, oh, great. If I tell them, they get mad. And I remember noticing how often I heard that. And I thought, now, why do people not get mad when I tell them, but get mad when someone else tells them? And I observed how the someone else was telling them. And even if you believe you're doing somebody a disservice, if you expect them, even if you're not, but you believe it or you are worried about it, and are judgmental about it, often people will just pick that up. We've all got Geiger counters, little, you know, things, just antennae out there looking for who's going to hurt us, because we're such a dysfunctional world, and people do. So, you know, that's understandable. On the other hand, the good news is how powerfully we can change this by our energy, by how we have processed something. And not to be hard on yourself on that either, because things take as long as they take to process. So once you kind of just relax and say, okay, I'd rather not. Let's say you have a significant other, and there's this particular area that's always sensitive, and you always argue over it. Well, what you want to do to break that pattern so that you have a means to change the energy around is to first look at the situation. And when it comes up, see what was happening a few moments before it came up, before there was a match and before there was annoyance or anger or frustration or judgmentalness, right before. And it's like rolling a videotape backwards. So if you go to the moment right before, that's your moment of power. That's your place to change the energy on what's going to be the relating in the next moment. Now, we're talking about some that have already happened and it didn't work out so well. So, you know, just play it back to right before. And then what you want to do is try to invent a response to what either they said or to change what you said if you started the interaction to something that the other person can hear with love. You don't have to lie. In fact, it's important not to say what it is that you need to say, but say it with goodwill for the other person. Not even a hint of judgmentalness, really, in the end, can be there. When I first discovered this, it was many, many years ago, and I remember I didn't like it when people spoke badly to me. And so this is about 40 years ago that I discovered this. And I call it matching energy. And what it is, what I discovered was that I didn't like it when people were disrespectful to me. So I tried to notice when that happened and if there was anything I could do to turn that around. And what I noticed was that the person was either fearful or judgmental or coming from something else or was jealous, wanted to feel superior or something like that. And what I decided was that I would just hold a space of real dignity, of kindness and goodwill, and have some sympathy for them, some empathy that they were injured, but not be the doormat, not let them dump on me, but still be warm. And it worked like a miracle. I was so astounded at how fast it worked, that it actually worked at the speed of thought, that I only had to think the change. I didn't even have to say anything. I just had to think it, and it changed. So when you're in a relationship with a child or a parent or a friend or a lover and someone you're close to and deal with, or even someone you work with who you don't get along with perhaps, I have given this advice over thousands of workshops, and I've gotten thousands of replies back at how well it works. That, let's say there's somebody in your office who always is criticizing or gives you a hard time. What you begin to do is to take them out of the ugly box that they are obviously in now in your mind and say, this is somebody who's insecure, has other problems, and I am not going to match energy with their fear. I am going to find what's good about them, what I do like, what they do well. I'm going to find that in my mind. I'm going to feel it in my body. And I'm going to speak to that part of the person, the part that I respect. You know the old Sufi saying, Namaste, the God in me salutes the God in you. So if you speak to the God in them, or just the person, the human being who, you know, is just a person who you can have compassion for, if you speak to that person, the energy frequency will change between you. They will find it difficult to be mean to you back. That's why this person who's on the air is being such an exemplar. I mean, I feel very sorry for her because I feel that she is kind of mentally ill, actually. And I know it is for greed, it's for money, it's for attention. I know everybody says it's a shtick, you know, like a lot of mean talk radio is a shtick. You know, it's not really about enlightening or communicating. It's about riling people up. And somebody did ask me this question, and I wanted to included in the show today to answer it, is why is there so much of that in our world right now? I mean, it's as though we have hit the lowest common denominator in business, with Enron, in politics, with all the corporate bribery and the fixing of elections, all the different kinds of things, the dishonesties, the superficiality, business in general, and media. Why is it so, I almost want to say unearnest, not only dishonest, but unearnest? And I think it is the dark before the dawn. I think what's happening is we're becoming ready. We're becoming just about at the point where we need to see all our shadow. And I think this woman who was on television and has gotten some notoriety by being so mean, is actually kind of an archetype for the worst part of our own inner voice. And whenever you hear that really mean inner voice, pause and think and say, this is my insecure, judgmental self, probably judging myself way too harsh, and certainly the other person. But, you know, in my experience, doesn't tend to go out to the other person unless there's something covered over inside. That's why the psychological term projection exists and it is what it describes. And the good news about that is that it's your pay dirt. That's what I always call it, you know. It's your pay dirt. Your stuff is your pay dirt. It is the thing that lets you know where you're changing, where you're growing, what's up for a new perception, what is up for transformation inside of you. your next level of development. And the big block, the big obstacle, is that our culture thinks in this old-style thinking, judgmental way. And it's such a collective number that it creates a barrier that's quite difficult culturally for us to get through. We're socialized into it. It's immature thinking anyway. It's the kind of thinking when you have when you're very little and you have not a lot of information. The thing that's different when we're little is we have all this innocence, but we don't have enough knowledge to not think kind of simplistically. And that's why it's the job of adults to not humiliate children, to not shame them, to not be judgmental, to not say, do it because I say so, but say, you know, it would be good to do it because this is this. And then you can say, you know, and I'm sorry, you do have to do it because I'm mom or I'm dad, and, you know, I know this is for your good, so I must, you know, insist. Sometimes it gets to that. You know what? It almost never does. If you're relating in goodwill, children pick it up. They know. They know you mean well. It's when you feel guilty about having to tell them to do something that they feel that and resent it. So the real secret in relating is to observe your own inner voice, to be willing to be empathetic and hear it from the other person's point of view. As I started to say before, it's a very powerful tool. When I was opening about 35 years ago, I remember reading somewhere two ancient Chinese proverbs, and they're like 5,000 years old, these proverbs. And the two proverbs were, everyone you meet is your mirror. And the second one was, you become what you resist. And I remember I was so ripe to hear those that the minute I read it, I heard it in my mind, and I felt like my own index finger turning around and pointing at me. And any time I thought a critical thought about anybody, after that time, this inner finger turned around and pointed at me. And I was exhausted. I mean, it was like 3 months of every single thought I had that was critical of somebody else. I had this sort of finger around point at me. And I remember being really exhausted. And I remember thinking, oh, God, nobody can read my mind right now, because I had no idea I was so judgmental. And I just could see it because I let myself move to the mind that would let me see it. And this is our power. This is our living on the growing edge. This is what the evolutionary leap is. When you live on the growing edge, you are allowing the exchange, the interchange, the relating with the universe to go on in such a way as that you become more. You become more than what you were. And it's so typical of our old-style thinking that we fear change. We don't like change. And I have since come to find that a quote I thought was mine, well, it was, but it was a very ancient one, too, is that, well, the way I said it was, the only thing you can be certain of is that there is change. And the only thing you can count on, for sure, is that things will change. And that's an obvious truth, but it's amazing how we have a style of thinking that wants to fight that all the time. And there was another program that I saw on television over the weekend about hell. And they had these different ministers and religious historians talking about hell, and how so much of it is just made up every few hundred years to fit the culture of the times, because you know, there really isn't that much that says what hell is, you know, in the Bible and elsewhere. So it just is such a mirror for our own unconscious and our fears. And it was so interesting to me that there was a prominent minister woman said, hell is filled with change. hell is when there's change all the time. And I remember being sort of taken aback with the absoluteness with which she said it, like this pronouncement of certainty that it was change, and as though that was hellish in itself, that things would change, and that she knew it, and that was her definition or part of her definition of hell. So I really had to laugh. There goes that projection again. And so we project onto people, we project onto the devil, we project onto hell, we project onto some evildoer out there. And I remember when I used to take peace groups to the Soviet Union, when it was the Soviet Union, and when I came back, I'd say, you know, one of the things that's going to face our country in the next, coming decades, really, is that we're going to lose the Soviet Union as an enemy. And when that happens, we're really going to be stuck because we have a whole lot of shadow and we will have to invent someone else to project it upon, or we could choose to grow up and heal ourselves and heal our own country and heal our own nature and culture and what we are doing with honesty, earnestness, and caring. And if we did that, then we wouldn't have this shadow that we would need to project onto others, because we would be looking at our shadow. We would be looking at what's wrong. And so we almost have an archetypal collective right now that is really, not only in America, but all around the world. Like, it's almost as though half the people are terrified to ever look at themselves. And it's like the other half saying, well, maybe we should look at ourselves. So it is such a setup by the universe for growth, for transformation, for healing. So this is sort of a long way around to answer that listener's question about why is it so sort of so dark right now, and why is there so much dysfunction sexually, politically, medically, blindness, so much blindness. And very invested in staying blind. Which also reminds me, one time I was on an airplane, and there was when you're on airplanes, you sit next to people and they talk to you. But a very nice lady I was sitting next to, and she asked me what I did, and I always have some difficulty because it doesn't handily fit into a box or any that I would choose to use. So I said, well, I teach intuition and logic and how to use them together. It's a new kind of thinking for problem solving. And I help people understand how the intuitive mind works and its connection to spirit and spirituality. And she said, oh, intuition. She said, I don't know. I don't think I'd like that. And I said, oh, you wouldn't like having the ability to be clairvoyant or have premonitions or anything related to intuition. She said, oh, no, that would be terrible. And I said, oh, really? I said, would you like to be colorblind? And she looked at me, and she got real still. And she said, oh, I see what you mean. It's just information. I said, that's right. That's all it is. And we had added something else because of our shadow that has nothing to do with the power of perception and healing, except that perception and healing and power is thwarted and stopped by our immaturity of judgmental thinking. We create too many filters. I call it box thinking. Just put things in a box and make it very small and very tight and defend the box. And then you can never think, you can never really think beyond it. And this sort of vaguely reminds me of a quote from Henry David Thoreau, who said, do not be too moral. You may cheat yourself out of much life. So aim above morality. Be not simply good. Be good for something. And what I liked about that is, I would paraphrase it and amplify it a little. What most people are content to do is be right and not even near simply good. Simply good would be quite a step up. But it, maybe in his time in the mid-1800s, good was used in the same way right is now. And So to be simply right is not enough, and it's much more powerful, as I always say, to be good than to be right. And he's adding the dimension to be good for something, meaning that goodness has a purpose. Goodness is about what you do when you empathize, when you extend yourself. What do you do? Or what do you choose? And the something, for me, is God. You know, it's the inspiration. It's the thing beyond the linear, beyond the black and white, the beyond being right, the beyond winning, but just being good because it's empowering, it's healthy, it makes us alive. And very much, another quote that sort of fits with all of this is from Thomas Paine, who said, "A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right." And that's where we are so much right now in our culture. We have lots of long habits of simplistic thinking, of boxes that are little knee-jerk responses about this is right, and it's superficial. And because it's superficial, we can make it I call it like a boogeyman box, you know. Like if anybody challenges this superficial little box, like alarm bells go off because no one will think outside of boxes. Now the good reason for this now, getting back to our listener, is that it's good that there is this problem right now, because it's showing us, it's giving us the opportunity to think beyond and to see how unhelpful, ineffective, unhelpful, destructive, unkind, very damaging is old-style thinking. We get a chance to see that. A lot of people die. There's an old quote that I hope I remembered correctly from Rudyard Kipling. This short one, and he said, there's a soldier from World War One in his poem that he was writing about, and he said, this is the soldier speaking, he said, when they ask why we died, tell them that our fathers lied. And it's so potent and so poignant because it hits us at the level of human family that the sons betrayed by fathers because the father has a fear and doesn't think beyond his fear, because he doesn't think beyond black and white. That's a very intimate, painful, tight relationship. But if we really stop to think of it, that is the human relationship everywhere. And it really does hurt us when we lie to be right, when we lie to win an argument. Or even if we don't lie, but we have powerfully focused selective memory, selective words, so that we purposely steal from others, malign others, harm others, slander others. This is the kind of almost illness that's kind of rampant across the country. Anybody working in a big company knows about this. Anybody in the government knows about this. Anybody in the media knows about this. Any medical system knows about this. Any academic system knows about it. Any penal system knows about it. Any legal system knows about it. Lots of dishonesty, lots of terrible mistakes, terrible injustices, all because we are operating at a level of superficiality to defend a style of thinking that's immature and dysfunctional that we haven't realized, in so many words, doesn't work. And that the way to realize it is very personal. The way to realize it is done within yourself as you encounter a conflict in a relationship. So this is why this evolutionary leap is one of consciousness and capacity to perceive. And it is a leap in consciousness, and it's an evolutionary change in the way our brains work, so that we can allow more information in allow our talents of empathy, which are related to precognition and clairvoyance and telepathy and things that we normally call, you know, ESP, extrasensory perception. Not extrasensory, it's normal sensory perception when your mind isn't closed or damaged or has running, as I've talked about it before, a kind of software, like you can have a magnificent computer that's the fastest, most complex, able to hold the most information that anybody ever conceived of, and you put, you know, an old operating system on it, you know, it'll probably just crash for the most part because you can't do too much. You know, it's like the old saying with computers too, garbage in, garbage out. They're only as good as the information you put in. Well, our brains are not exactly like that. They're much more powerful than that. They know things that we don't put in. But a lot of what we call our conscious mind is about what we put in or was put in for us. But the unique beauty of being human, really awesome beauty, is that we have what verges on magical power to heal ourselves by facing what we fear. One of my quotes that I use all the time that came to me actually in a dream. I actually had a dream about this. And it was, by going through the portal of your greatest fear is how you find your fondest dream. So the things we fear most are really the things that have pay dirt in them. They are the things that if we held them in a new light, if we devised a new response, if we related to them in a different way, in a way that allowed some win-win, some respect, some getting beyond who's right, who's wrong, and winning, and move to what's good, what's wholesome, what heals, what's empathetic, what's understanding, what's kind, what's compassionate, what's earnest, and what is honest, then something else comes about. And I really do believe that the last couple of decades have been a tremendous setup for this time. And it's as though all our shadow is so, you know, like mixed metaphors, hit the fan, you know. It's so up for having the light turned on it. And the more shadow that's up and then the light is turned onto it, the more shadow is healed. That's why it's good. That's why it's good all this stuff is coming up. And it's why it's important that we do hold hearings in the government and that we do pass new laws and that we do check that the elections aren't fixed, and we do investigate when they are, and we do, when we find that there has been a rigging of an election, that we hold it, and that we hold things truly accountable. We don't say that as a buzzword because that's what people are hungry for, and use it as a way to say I'm saying the right words, but to actually do it. That's a different thing. And it is that earnestness, and much of that earnestness, only you and God will know you did it. People who also have done it will know you did it. Because, you know, it's like it takes one to know one. So when you've been working on yourself, and there is that soft, quiet, loving present that starts to get developed, it's not fake. It's not talking soft to sound soft, and it's not, you know, being sort of mealy-mouthed words to affect a spirituality. But because there, you need to think a little bit softer, slower to encompass the huge amount of information that's actually coming in your experience of the situation and people and what's going on. And in letting so much in, we slow down. We don't sound so fast. We don't sound so sharp and so rapid fire. You see people who, you know, as you see on the media so much, that are all rapid fire and loud. It's all shtick. It's not really substantive. It's superficial. They say sort of the same kind of things over and over again. They select things to talk about that let them say the same kind of things over and over again. we're going to start to observe this. And as we observe it, it isn't so much to put them down or, you know, make them wrong. It's to know the truth about it, to see. Because when you can see, then you relate more deeply. You relate more sensitively. And you empower people who you are with to be their best selves. And paradoxically, that's what happens to you too. So the wonder and beauty of a relationship, and in fact, one of the things they always say about it all the time, is that there's no more powerful way to become conscious than in relationship. And, you know, we pick relationships because we have matching energy with the person. Sometimes the matching energy is love. Almost always there's some love, even maybe a lot. But there usually is also something I call matching garbage. Often there's matching emotional defensiveness, and often it's opposite. So one person's looking at it one way and the other person's looking at it the opposite way. So this is the clash. This is the argument. This is the it rubs you the wrong way kind of feeling. This is the thing that is annoying about that person. Now, sometimes things are annoying because you're putting up with something that's not honest. And really who you're annoyed with is you, because you're putting up with something that's not honest. You're not willing to say, gee, you know, I need this to change. I love all this about us, but, you know, this one part here could be a deal breaker because this doesn't feel right. You know, you give somebody time to change, but sometimes they can and sometimes they can't.
Regarding a question on...
We have a question.
Yeah.
I think to hear what it is. Just a second.
Depression and meds.
A question about what?
Depression and meds.
Oh, depression and meds.
Yes.
Oh, very good. Very, very, very good. And it certainly fits with what we were just talking about. Depression is when you depress natural, healthy, spontaneous response and energy. We all have conditioning. Our culture conditions us. Our family does. Our own experiences where we build a defense to protect ourselves create blocks. And when you get just enough of these blocks and they start to solidify at a certain time in your life when it's time to be more, and these blocks say, no, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. You can't say that. You can't be that. You can't do that. Teacher won't let you get up now. You got to sit there. Whatever it may be, it starts to get depressing. Your energy is literally depressed. I don't think of depression as an illness, other than the way everything is an illness. It's an energetic response, and it is harmful, and it is ill in that sense. It's a dis-ease. But the solution is not meds. Meds are, and I suppose I won't make that... I never make anything, never say never. There may be times where it fits for a short time for certain people, certain things. So I don't want to presume to say for everyone.
She says she's tired of taking pills, Patricia. Yeah, she says I currently take two of these prescriptions and she says she's tired of taking
pills. So you do get tired of taking medication, because what medication is it's a numbing out of the process. See, when you're depressed, when I did family counseling, I loved the person who was always the identified problem. The identified problem in the family was almost always the healthiest person. They often were acting out or doing something. Maybe they were depressed. Maybe they were arguing or fighting or stealing or running around or drinking or whatever they were doing. I don't know. But the person who had the whole family identified as the problem usually was the healthiest person and was trying to break up the family dynamic that needed to change. And the family was standing against it and that person, and they couldn't get them to change, and so they would do this dysfunctional stuff. And all you have to do is shift it into helping the family change so that they don't have to be dysfunctional and they don't blame them, and the whole thing changes. So this is about depression too. You find out what is your fondest dream? What is this wonderful part of you that's about to be born that you are believing is hopeless? And when you find out, or even if you don't find out entirely or just get a hint or you have a dream or a little bit starts, give it some energy. take a chance. Do something off the beaten path in the direction of your dream, in the direction of your inspiration, in the direction of your wish, in the direction of your aliveness. It can be a small thing to start with. It isn't like it has to be perfect. We have to understand the whole thing. That's another all or nothing at all kind of thinking that makes us stuck. The good news is it's a process, and one little step at a time. You know, what's that old saying, a journey of a thousand miles begins with a single step. So it's just the one step at a time. Even a little step is good. Any movement in the direction you need will immediately start to alleviate the depression. And if you stop, the depression starts to come back. So I don't believe in taking drugs myself because I am very alert and aware in my body. And drugs do, really, all drugs, to some degree or another, do only one thing. They either disrupt or numb you. And when they disrupt you, it's because you're in a rut, you need disruption. And when they numb you, it's because you're in pain and not going through the process that's necessary to heal the pain. And so the drug works, quote unquote. But interestingly, with drugs, they only work for a while because they actually have to put your body into a certain form of dysfunction and your brain into an altered state of consciousness that is not, you know, I think it's like cocaine, which is not a med, but people take it as a medication. I mean, that's why people take illicit drugs as well as prescription drugs. It's all sort of the same, you know, Oxycontin or whatever it is. But these drugs, and there's so many different kinds that it's hard to lump them all together and it's not appropriate, but still, being a drug is something that is from the outside going to give you a boost or a shift or a change. If it's done almost in a religious way, once or twice, to help you get a handle of getting out of the rut, that I don't find so difficult. What I find really difficult is the dysfunctional thinking in our medical profession, as though somehow this is treatment, keeping somebody numb, cutting something out, giving somebody a drug, putting something in. They do not have any awareness of the energetic connection to this ease that healing requires you to have. And so I totally sympathize with your position and would say that the healthiest thing to do is to start to stop or taper down, however is appropriate for that particular drug, and really try to replace it with noticing, like I said earlier in the show, when that little videotape, when you start to feel depressed, instead of just saying, oh, here I am depressed again, I'm going to fall into this hole and that's the end, say, what preceded that little feeling there? What right before that was there? And what was a choice I had? When did I say yes when I meant no? When did I turn right when I meant to turn left? When did I stop when I meant to go? You know, so that's the kind of thing you do to know yourself, to understand, to let your body give you the beautiful feedback it's struggling to give you for the expansion of your consciousness. Your body is wonderful. Your body is beautiful, it's exquisite, it's complex. It is the result of immense evolution and effort. It is rich. It is right to evolve to another step right at this time. And all we need to do is surrender a little bit to love, a little bit to innocence, a little bit to goodness, a little bit to courage, a little bit to taking a risk in a direction that feels wholesome and good.
And one person is asking, but what if someone is not ready to do that just yet?
If you're not ready to do it just yet, well, then what you do is you slow down and you observe how you're not ready to do it just yet. And that's okay, too. And you just notice when those things come up and you say, but I'm not ready just yet. And you see, what says I'm not ready just yet? You observe that. It's just bringing consciousness in. That's all it is. There's no scolding in it. There's no thread in it. It's simple cause and effect. It's real consequence. I mean, just energy trying to reveal itself. So if you don't feel quite ready, do it slowly. And just slow down and see what's the best you can do. Because, you know, ultimately, we are evolving, and this evolutionary leap that I'm speaking of, while I believe it's imminent as a tipping point right now, I do believe it's been going on for as long as human beings have been what we call civilized. There's a quote from Plato that says, good people do not need laws to tell them to act responsibly, while bad people will find a way around the laws. So it isn't about good people or bad people. It's about being alive and knowing that the fullness of aliveness comes from goodness. That being bad is a cheat. Being fearful is a cheat on yourself. And there's no way you couldn't have it. So you can't be mad at yourself for having it, because there's no way you could be born in this world and not be stuck in all that stuff. But the good news is we have the power to observe each moment. Each now is an awesome gift. And it is in the now moment that we have the power to observe a new potentiality, a different way of doing it. The best way to undo defense mechanisms is just do it different than the defense said. Gently, doesn't have to be a big deal, doesn't have to be real dramatic. It can be small little difference. So go gently, but just take one step at a time. It can be as small as you need. Just take a step. Just don't not step. That's the either-or thinking. It's the no movement versus some movement. Do some movement with goodness for yourself and have that be your guide, and you will see that there'll be a little scary moment there in the beginning, and then there'll be a flood of, wow, this is good. And then there'll be more energy that comes your way that gives you just enough energy to take another step and try it again. That's actually how it works. It's not a big intellectual decision because there's too much complexity in the pioneering, and it's best done little steps at a time. So that's what I suggest, and that's what real relating is all about, when you actually let yourself connect to the other person. So thank you so much for being with me today, and thank you for trusting the problem. And I'm Patricia Sun, and I wish you love.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. This program and its content is copywritten to Patricia Sun, all rights reserved, 2006.